You don't need special gadgets to be a hero. With unlimited 1.5% cash back on every purchase everywhere, the Capital One Quicksilver Card makes you the hero of every purchase. Whether it's headphones, a lounge chair, or even a well-deserved massage, whatever the Quicksilver purchase, you're the hero. No fighting bad guys, getting in epic car chases, or parachuting out of buildings required. Simple, isn't it? The Capital One Quicksilver Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck and Jerry's here, and we're all feeling rather chipper today. And this is Stuff You Should Know.
Not emotionally painful. Right this
That's
second.
Not true. Not at all true. I'm just really good at masking mine.
Aw.
How about you?
I'm feeling pretty good today.
I'm glad, man.
In this moment. But this is an interesting topic because, as we'll see when we cover our history section here at the beginning, and thanks to Livia for helping out with this one, right? Wouldn't it, Livia?
Yeah. She wrote this right around Christmas, too. I felt kind of bad. Yeah.
It's like, do one of puppies next.
Right.
We will soon learn, and it's probably no surprise, that things like emotional pain and mental distress have quite often and still quite often take a backseat in the West and then the medical world. And it's sort of, it's incredibly sad that that's the case.
Yeah, and just to do just a brief sketch, emotional pain is exactly what you've always thought it was. There's nothing, you know, there's no new concept to it that you're just going to be like, oh, that's emotional pain. Anytime you felt like heartache, sadness, embarrassment, something where you felt like your body was responding to a sudden emotion, that's emotional pain, right?
Yeah.
And it's just a part of life. People have said it's a part of life for a very long time. If you're a Buddhist, it is definitely a part of life. Same with Christians. It's just kind of how people have approached it. But you said something that I didn't realize, that here in the West, I mean, I guess I realized this part. Here in the West, if you go to a doctor and you say, I'm having emotional pain, they're like, actually, no, you're not. It's real pain. Your leg is missing right now, and I need to sew it up. And you're like, no, but I'm emotionally affected by this. They'd be like, shut up. That doesn't matter. And there's a reason for that. And you can trace it all the way back to Descartes.
That's right. I studied Descartes in college a bit. And this was a big deal. But in the 17th century, René Descartes proposed the idea of dualism with the mind and body. Mm-hmm. And you think like, okay, you know, great. That kind of makes sense in a way, especially in the 17th century. But that was a big deal that really, it was sort of a sea change and a fundamental split that happened, in which European medical science was trying to separate from the church as far as their oversight goes. But what the real effect was what I was talking about, was, you know, mental illnesses were really a distinct, separate thing from physical maladies.
Yeah, and still today in Western medicine, we do not combine those two, which is, you know, there's other cultures like traditional Chinese medicine, Indian Ayurvedic medicine, that they see mental and physical pain as pretty much, at the very least, deeply connected, not two completely separate things, one of which may or may not exist, like we believe in Western medicine. And to be able to trace it back to like this point where the early medical doctors were like, I call body, and the church is like, oh, I call mind, and they just kind of went their separate ways. I just find that fascinating. And it's landed us in this problem where we are in the United States and other Western countries where we really give short shrift to emotional pain, but we're learning more and more that it is just as real and just as sometimes unbearable as physical pain, sometimes worse, because there's not a lot of recognized treatments for it yet.
when they called mind and body, who was shirts and who was skins?
They were both skins.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was a sexy day.
People like Sigmund Freud, you know, it's not like no one ever talked about emotional pain in the West or it was studied or anything like that. It was just that separation. Freud, he did write about psychological pain, as did mm-hmm. a lot of people that followed Freud, or, you know, not necessarily acolytes of Freud, but people that followed after him. And, you know, kind of wrote about, you know, more in the terms of like mourning someone's death or maybe a big romantic loss or something, and this emptiness or loneliness or sadness you might feel. Mm-hmm. But that's still not where what we're talking about today, which is this mind-body connection where, and as we'll see, where study after study kind of, and again, it's a very hard thing to kind of prove outright, but strong correlations between physical conditions and emotional distress.
Yeah, and I think Freud was still talking about that. He was saying, like, yes, you actually feel pain when you suffer a loss, like a death or a breakup or something like that. But it's become a lot more sophisticated since Freud's time. There's a term called psychache that a guy named Edwin Schneidman coined.
I like that term.
Psychache?
Yeah.
It's so 90s.
It sort of is. Now that
that is a 90s term, psychic, yeah. All one word, right?
Sure.
And Edwin Schneidman, he did coin it in 93, and he basically said it's just another term for psychological anguish, and that he was a suicidologist, and he believed that psychache was essentially behind every single suicide that was ever attempted or completed, and he kind of chalked it up to a few different things. And you'll kind of see in the 90s and then kind of expanding today, it's kind of expanded and contracted until we finally arrived at a decent definition. But all of it has to do with you are suddenly experiencing a terrible discrepancy between the way you think things should be and the way they suddenly are. Mm-hmm. And you feel like you yourself are at fault somehow.
Yeah, and there's, you know, again, and as we'll see, it's a very hard thing to study. It's pain, period, is super subjective, as we all know. Physical pain is subjective. Emotional pain, maybe, well, it's probably about equally as subjective now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But there's not, as Olivia points out, there's not a one-to-one relationship between, like, an event and what he refers to as psychache. Like, somebody may be really good at getting over stuff like that a lot better than someone else. The level of the event may not necessarily always correlate to a level of emotional pain in any given individual. Some people maybe can process somebody's passing or death really, really well because they just get drunk all the time. Actually, that's a joke, but we will talk about that. That's a big component of all this stuff.
Definitely.
But the point is, like what Freud was talking about is something like an event happens or a loss happens. We've realized over the years that it's not always just that. And there can be a chronic emotional pain that people feel that's tied to certain disorders, obviously depression. Can be a big factor, but all these things aren't mutually exclusive either.
No, and the other thing that emerges is what we've all always known. All of us experience emotional pain to some degree or another, like you said, at different times, and some people chronically, unfortunately. And they finally, I guess in the last 10 years maybe, have come up with a consensus definition from what I can tell.
Let's hear it.
They say that emotional pain, which by the way is interchangeable with psychological pain, mm-hmm. psychical pain, psychache, it's all the same thing. But emotional pain is a lasting, unsustainable, and unpleasant feeling resulting from negative appraisal of an inability or deficiency of the self. And so that the basic emotion of psychic pain, psychological pain, emotional pain, is self-disappointment. You're in an aversive state where you have a high self-awareness of inadequacy, and that is what you can kind of trace all of it back to.
Yeah, and we'll talk about physical symptoms. There can be very specific things at times, like upset stomach or, you know, things that might be brought on by what you might think of as stress. But if you experience sort of chronic mental anguish and emotional pain, a lot of times it is just an overall body woundedness that you might feel that you can't specifically, and that's sort of one of the issues is it's, you don't walk into a doctor in America and say, my whole body feels off because I'm in emotional distress. They're going to say, well, you've called the wrong doctor.
Right here, take these sugar pills and go home, but also give me $5,000. Right.
And I'm sorry about the weight.
So they're not really sorry about the weight. They may say that, Chuck, but they don't mean it.
What's social pain?
Social pain is either the same thing as emotional pain or it's kind of a subset of it, but they seem to strictly, they say it's strictly from social interactions, like rejection, being dumped, damage to your social connections. I saw FOMO. FOMO, that would be one.
Yeah, it's like a joke that people say, but that is very real with some people, you know?
Right. And so like when you feel FOMO, right? You feel bad. You don't, it's not just in your head. It's so hard to get across. And it's almost totally unnecessary to get across because all of us have experienced emotional pain at some time or another. But if you've ever stopped and thought about it, why would your body feel at all weird? Why wouldn't it just be strictly in your emotions or strictly in your head or strictly in your mind? Like, I've got this problem and I can't stop thinking about it. Instead, or in addition to that, because that definitely happens too, your body actually feels bad, wrong, off, pained, tense because of this emotional pain. And they actually believe, this to me is the fact of the podcast, they believe that emotional pain came along as a result of our increasing socialization from the time we were primates up until now. And it piggybacked on our existing physical pain system. And because social bonds were so important to survival, that it became a thing where you felt pain when those social bonds were threatened or broken.
Right. Like Tuk-Tuk very sore from long hunt today, but Tuk-Tuk feel especially painful today because Tuk-Tuk not invited to main fire.
Tuk-Tuk doesn't use prepositions.
Should he?
I don't know. It depends. If he's like unfrozen caveman lawyer, yes.
Right. Yeah.
So the thing is what Tuk-Tuk would have learned from there, Chuck, or from that experience is I need to pay attention to this. There's something I'm doing wrong. There's something somebody else is doing wrong. And I need to remedy it. I need to do something different in the future. And then in that way, my social connections will be stronger. And when a saber-toothed tiger comes along, I'll have my crew to take care of it rather than it just making a meal out of me.
Yeah, this is a great setup.
I think so, too.
Should we take a break?
Yes, let's.
All right, we'll be right back to talk more and hopefully make a few other little jokes about emotional pain.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine. or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today. Health Aid Kombucha.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now.
This is a tough one to joke about, you know?
It is. But I think more than anything to me, it's a tough one to talk about. And I don't understand why. Maybe it's because it's not fully understood yet. So I'm having trouble understanding or explaining it, you know?
Yeah. And when I say joke about, of course, I mean joke alongside. None of this is joke worthy. But we're a part comedy show. So we try to work in these angles when we can, right?
Yes, the funniest is when we explain that we're making jokes about it and why, but why we really shouldn't, or that they don't really count.
I think new people come along. Did you see somebody was very upset about your awesome, awesome Midwest joke? From our Edmund Fitzgerald podcast. Somebody wrote in, and I didn't even remember because we recorded a lot to get ahead for Christmas, but I didn't even remember the joke. Somebody was very offended, and I said, well, what happened? I said, I feel like it was probably a joke that I could explain, but just let me know what happened. And then wrote back, and it was a great joke. I said, I was trying to think of the game, the card game Euchre. Oh, no, it was in tarot, tarot cards. And I said, what was that game? I said, that Midwesterners often played, and you went, get me out of here. Yeah, and then this person, I said it was just a joke, of course, and that you're from the Midwest, so you can say that. And this person, I think, felt a little bad even, which I then felt bad about. And that's no good for anyone.
Now the rest of us feel bad because you shared it, and we all feel bad for you and the other person.
All right. Can we talk about how mental pain affects the body?
Yes, because here's the point. It's not just that mental pain exists. It actually is real pain. And thanks to our friend, the Wonder Machine, the fMRI,
that's right.
We actually know that the same parts of your brain that are responsible for experiencing different types of physical pain, they light up. They become active in the presence of emotional pain. And they did this by basically inflicting emotional pain on poor participant studies and then seeing what their brains did.
Yeah. And here's the thing with a lot of these studies, what's important, I think, to know is that it wasn't necessarily in an exact time of crisis. Like, you know, we wanted to gather up people who had been dumped the day before.
Right.
Because, of course, you're going to be in that sort of state of mind at the time. Like most of these studies, you'll see it's like studying your brain during resting rates or your heart during resting rates. And it's, you know, it feels like it's more, and I'm not saying, you know, they're all in emotional pain still, but they didn't like juice these studies by getting just these like recently devastated people, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Right. At first. And some of the techniques they use is just take an average person off the street and say, we want to inflict emotional pain on you. They would, in the experiment, they would be playing a game with other subjects and they would exclude the actual study participant from the game.
Yeah.
Or they would tell them that one of the other participants admitted to not liking them. And they would show them rejection-themed pictures, stuff like that. And it was coming up with some pretty tepid results. But then there was a guy named Ethan Cross from University of Michigan.
With a K.
Yeah.
Chris Cross style.
He'll make you jump.
Yeah.
For his study results.
I wonder if he wears his clothes backwards when he presents findings.
Those kids made like $1 million from wearing their clothes backwards at the mall once.
Oh, really? Just to go out there and do that?
That's how they were discovered at the mall.
Oh.
Discovered them.
Wow.
Yeah.
What a
world. That was why. It is a world. But anyway, back to Ethan Chris Cross. He used the Wonder Machine, but he did recruit people who were in an intense negative emotional state who had just been recently dumped and were not taking it very well. And he put them in the Wonder Machine and he said, hey, here's a picture about your ex that just dumped you.
Yeah.
Or a picture of them. Now think about some memory of them dumping you and how bad it feels. And then he sat there with a clipboard and a pencil and went, very interesting. I see. And watched their brains do different things.
Yeah. And they said, how did you get that picture?
Don't ask about that. They give them a zap when they ask too many questions.
Yeah. And I think there were about 40 people in this study. And again, he eventually used, he used the fMRI eventually, right?
Yes.
And what he found out was that the negative emotional state lit up the sensory and affective brain areas, just like putting like hot heat on their arm. So this physical heat, and this sort of made a little sense to me as far as like, if you get, like if I get really, really intensely upset about something, I feel like my head is on fire.
Right.
So yeah. I think there's something about heat, and maybe that's why I used it, but they would like, I don't think they would burn them, but they would put what was called a painful heat on their forearm and found that the fMRI lit up just the same as with the emotional pain.
Yeah. And so that supported something that he had also found in a review of existing literature, that the brain regions associated with our affective experience about the aversive quality of pain, which is we like if you hurt yourself physically, right? You're suffering. That suffering is your desire for that pain to stop. You want it to go away. It's like hurting you existentially. It goes beyond just the actual physical experience, the sensory experience of it. That's the affective experience of physical pain. And that region of the brain definitely lights up the same for emotional pain and physical pain, because we're suffering from both equally. But what Cross said or showed was that, no, your actual sensory experience, like what your body feels when you're physically in pain, is the same when you're in emotionally in pain. So he said, ipso facto, my research shows emotional pain and physical pain, as far as the body is concerned, is the same thing. It's really just your doctor in the United States that is having trouble admitting this whole thing. All the evidence is showing your body's fully aware that they're the same.
Yeah, and it's, I don't know, it's so frustrating because, like I said, when I think everybody, when they get really emotionally upset, the first thing that happens is your body is going to start physically reacting. Mm-hmm. Like I said, my head gets flush and hot and like the heart races and it's this almost like this fear response in me. So it's hard to believe that, you know, something like fight or flight is just so universally accepted. But something like this, which to me is the same thing going on, can still be poo-pooed.
Yeah, poo-pooed for now, but not much longer, I predict.
Yeah,
and for me, Chuck, since we're throwing out our own stories, if I suffer some sort of emotional injury or whatever, right, usually like embarrassment or something like that,
yeah,
it washes over me is the best way I can put it. Mm-hmm. Basically, from the back of my head down the front and then through my chest and abdomen.
Yeah.
And I actually saw research that suggested the vagus nerve that connects the brain through the chest and your abdomen and into your, I believe, your junk area, because it's activated during orgasms from our orgasm episode years back. I think
the medical term is your bits.
But they, They found that the anterior cingulate cortex activates the vagus nerve, which can become overstimulated in the presence of a huge jolt of emotion, which can transfer to the vagus nerve, which can make you feel in your chest and abdomen like there's some sort of discomfort or sensation. Again, an emotion created a physical response. You're not crazy. You really are feeling that way.
Yeah. And like, I remember feeling this stuff from the time I even knew what feelings were, you know. Nobody likes to be picked last as far as the social pain. No one likes to be embarrassed in front of people, but that stuff doesn't stop, you know.
Right.
The social thing, like when we were talking about it, it might sound like obviously something you will experience in adolescence and growing up, but that stuff doesn't go away.
No, it really doesn't.
Or at least it didn't for me.
No, same here. I thought about making that joke, but then I pulled it back from the edge.
I mean, maybe some people have really squared themselves away such, but it to me, it just seems like part of, and you know, a bunch of the history that we kind of truncated at the beginning talked about it being part of the human condition. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's so obviously true.
It's totally true. I think people who don't have to deal with that are really just dealing with it less than other people. I don't think anybody's ever managed to eradicate emotional pain from their lives, you know?
Yeah. And the people that seem like they've got it all together could be suffering the worst. You never know. They might just be really good at burying that stuff or what have you.
Yeah, like Flanders types.
Right. Exactly.
There's one other thing about the comparison, though, of physical pain and emotional pain that really is a difference. And that is that when you're experiencing physical pain, there's usually something you can do to kind of stem it off immediately. Mm-hmm. If you put your hand on like a hot oven, you can pull your hand away. But if you experience like an emotional injury and you feel emotional pain, you can't like hold your hand. You can't run it underwater. There's nothing you can do right then to stop it except for essentially self-soothe as best you can until it subsides. Whereas with physical pain, there's often stuff you can do to kind of treat it immediately.
Yeah, what I think, and that's an acute thing, I totally agree. But what I think is interesting is that like evolutionarily speaking, emotional pain is a signal just like a physical pain is mm-hmm. a signal to like tend to yourself in some way.
Right.
And we get a lot of emails from people that are suffering great deals of emotional pain. Like listeners, you would not believe some of the emails we get of people that are in such distress. Mm-hmm. And I always try to say the same thing, which is like, and usually it's in reference to the podcast kind of helping calm them down in some way, which is really nice to hear. But I always tell people the same way, which is like, hey, listen, get some help and treat yourself right. Like drink a lot of water, go for a walk. Like these are literal physical things that you can do that will, it's not a cure, but it will certainly help alleviate acute symptoms, you know?
Right. Self-soothe.
Yeah, but it's more than self-soothe to me, because it's like, it's like, no, you need to treat it like there's a physical problem. Like, that's right. Why you should drink a lot of water and go outside. And it's soothing, but it's also doing something to your body.
And interestingly, we'll talk about things you can do. You just nailed a bunch of them. But apparently walking outside in nature is a really great way to, alleviate emotional pain. And like if you have a forest, great, walk around the forest. If you have a meadow, walk around a meadow. If you have a public park, walk around the park. Just getting outside can help a tremendous amount.
Yeah, agreed.
I think that's a really nice thing that you say to people, though, Chuck. My pat response is, hey, man, keep on trucking.
Right. just like that mudflap says.
Yeah. No one ever writes back. Although, or if they do, they're like even madder than they were before. They're more upset than before.
Yeah, it's weird. People are strange.
Do you want to talk about drugs?
Yeah, this is really interesting to me, this first bit on acetaminophen, because and I had no idea about any of this, but they have found out through studies that acetaminophen, like Tylenol or other types of, you know, generic painkillers, mm-hmm. it actually can dull you emotionally. I'm wondering about to what degree, because they say it can dull the social pain that you might feel if you're FOMO'd or left out of something. It can emotionally blunt your reactions that other, like if somebody tells you about something bad, you can be, I guess, less empathetic if you're taking acetaminophen. And that was really surprising.
The converse is true too. Because you're less empathetic, you experience fewer positive emotions too. So the weird thing is it's not like it affects your brain or your processing of events. You're fully aware of like, this is a really great thing my friend's telling me. And I understand that my friend is reasonably proud for this, but I don't feel at all happy for them because of the acetaminophen. That's a really weird effect.
I wonder how much and how pronounced, like,
I don't know.
Yeah, I want to follow up on that. I don't really ever take that stuff that much.
Right.
But
I feel like even, you know, just the few times you have taken it, if it was a pronounced effect, you probably would have noticed it.
Probably.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if your hand is suddenly making trails of itself,
right.
Even though that's the first time you've taken this, you noticed that happened,
yeah.
I would, because it was a pronounced effect. Same thing with, you know, emotions being blunted with acetaminophen, yeah. Probably.
Good point. Opioids, obviously, is something we can't not talk about. We should probably tackle bits and pieces of the opioid epidemic in full episodes, but... opioids are interesting in that sometimes you might be taking them for a real physical malady and you happen upon the emotional relief that all of a sudden feels good to you when you take an mm-hmm. opioid, mm-hmm. whereas other people, that is exactly what they're seeking when yeah. they're like med seeking or buying pills on the black market or whatever.
Yeah, which is a huge problem. And it's, you know, obviously not just opioids, but alcohol and food.
Sure.
Basically anything that can give you some sort of positive feeling can be, you know, used to stave off emotional pain.
Yeah.
That is not the way to do it, though. But, you know, a lot of people do it that way. And it's tough to blame them.
Sure.
Especially if they haven't found a better way yet to deal with it.
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned before that pain, all kinds of pain is very subjective, mm-hmm. and especially emotional pain. And obviously, because of that, it's a really hard thing to quantify. We've talked about the physical pain scale that was developed, but there have been various attempts over the years at mental pain scales, and they've never really all agreed like, hey, this is the really, really good one, because there's scores of data behind it. And mm-hmm. they talked with a bunch of people who live with mental pain, and they kind of signed off on it. It's weird that they haven't really done that, but yeah. they've, the long story short is they've never been able to land on a really great one. Although I think one they do kind of use, right? The Orbach one.
Yeah, they use the Orbach and Michelinzer mental pain scale pretty frequently. But the problem is there was a review of 10 major scales that are used around the world that was published in 2022 in the British Medical Journal. And they said none of these seem to be valid.
Yeah.
Like they're all, they might as well all be like tea leaves and lizard guts. Like that's as good as they are at really nailing down emotional pain or quantifying it. So they said we shouldn't give up or anything like that. We just need to figure out how to do it better. So
yeah.
essentially the upshot is there's no way at the moment to accurately measure emotional pain
yeah.
and then I guess figure out how to treat it depending on the measurement from there.
Yeah,
why else would you want to measure it?
Yeah, I guess so. Because I was about to say why I feel like sometimes a discipline can get so hung up
yeah.
on something like this that it thwarts progress.
Yeah.
So I hope that's not the case.
It's called getting wonky.
It's no surprise. We mentioned a little bit earlier about other conditions related to mental pain. I guess comorbidities, for lack of a better word. But heartbreak, you mentioned, is obviously one of the big ones. What I found interesting in this is that some people have, like in heartbreak, to drug withdrawal. Mm-hmm. And it makes a lot of sense because when you are in love, and especially if you've ever been sort of that new love, if you've ever been newly in love, but mm-hmm. that really flamed out fast and it's taken away from you, that's sort of like drug withdrawal because you've got all sorts of dopamine and oxytocin and things firing when you have that fresh new love happening. And mm-hmm. if that's taken away, then it's like taking away a feel-good drug.
Yeah. Welcome to 6th to 9th grade.
Right. 6th to 9th, man. Boy.
The thing
through college.
Okay, sure. Fair enough. Welcome to 6th grade through the rest of your life. How about that?
Kind of.
The thing is because you're experiencing this and because you're experiencing stress, like when you undergo rejection or a sense of betrayal or a sense of loss, your body actually does release cortisol. So you actually are experiencing stress and you actually can have physical symptoms from that, like digestive problems, tough to sleep. Your immune system is down. You might get sick. And then we did an episode a long time ago called Can You Die of a Broken Heart? And the answer is yes, you can. There's something called Takotsubo cardiomyopathy, which is a sudden emotional or physical stressor basically weakens the heart, and you basically have a heart attack from it, possibly from being dumped if it's bad enough.
I knew that sounded super familiar.
I say before we go any further, Chuck, we take our last break. How about that?
Let's do it.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
So I think one of the first things people think about when they think of emotional pain is depression.
Sure.
Like there's, you know, there are people out there who have depression, and you can make an argument that with depression, you're suffering chronic emotional pain. Mm-hmm. What they found, though, is that people with emotional pain, if you have really high levels of emotional pain, it's not necessarily correlated with the largest burden of depression. So if you put 10 people together and you got one guy who's the most depressed of all, he's not necessarily the person with the greatest levels of emotional pain, which suggests that depression and emotional pain are not one and the same. Depression's its own thing. Mm-hmm. It has other symptoms. It just correlates very strongly with emotional pain, which seems to be one of the leading symptoms of depression, but not 100% what depression is. They're not interchangeable.
Yeah, and a lot of these that we're talking about here, like, they're weaving in and out of each other all the time in some cases. I think the distinction is still important to make, though, you know, rather mm-hmm. than just lumping it in as all one kind of thing.
And eating disorders, too. A lot of people are like, you got an eating disorder, you really like the food, huh? And most people who treat eating disorders are aware that it has very little to do with food. Food just happens to be something that these people can use to cope, that they can use to feel better about themselves or forget or distract themselves for a little while. But really what they're doing is dealing with emotional pain that they don't have a better way to deal with, so they turn to food. That's what eating disorders are.
Yeah, there was a study in 2021 that, and I'm surprised it wasn't higher, honestly, that found that 44% of disordered eating patients experienced significant mental pain compared to 6% of the control. So that's mm-hmm. quite a jump.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge. That's pretty much all you need to say. What else, Chuck?
Well, this is sort of the big one. I mean, they're all big, but borderline personality disorder, BPD, this may be sort of at the top of the ladder as far as what might cause the most consistent and the worst kind of mental pain that someone might suffer. Because a lot of times, for many reasons, but a lot of times you suffer from BPD because of childhood abuse or childhood neglect. Sometimes it's there's some genetics thrown in there, but you know, this is stuff that's very, very deeply rooted in somebody.
Yeah. And so it's chronic mental pain, especially those related to narcissistic wounds, where you feel a sense of rejection and it just completely undermines your sense of self-worth and pride. But the way that it manifests itself in people with borderline personality disorder is that they might have inappropriate anger. They might dissociate from themselves or reality. They might feel emptiness. They are emotionally unstable in most cases. And what I saw it ascribed to is that essentially because of that childhood neglect or abuse or trauma of some sort, they become so afraid of being abandoned that they actually alienate people with their behavior.
Yeah.
That sounds to me like a old medieval curse, essentially.
Yeah.
Like the more you try to keep people around you, the further away they're going to get, and you're really going to want them to be around you. That sounds about as awful an affliction as you can have, really.
Yeah, and you know, you shouldn't be surprised that if you suffer from borderline personality disorder, you're way more likely to abuse or misuse substances, maybe suffer from that eating disorder we were talking about, have obviously anxiety, depression, and even be at risk for suicide.
Yeah. I think we should do a BPD episode someday.
Yeah, there's a lot there, for sure.
There's also something called non-suicidal self-injury, and it is a fairly new diagnosis as far as the DSM is concerned. And it can be its own symptom. It can be a symptom of other things, like people with BPD often engage in non-suicidal self-injury. But essentially what it is self-cutting, punching a wall like a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
Frequently thought was that these people are overcome with emotions, and the only way to release that tension from that emotion is to cut themselves or punch that wall.
Mm-hmm.
And more recent research has found that actually they think that what they've stumbled upon is this kind of innate mechanism humans have, where when you experience a painful stimulus, when it subsides, you don't just go back to how you felt right before the painful stimulus. You actually have a bit of a sense of euphoria, and that they're actually going for that sense of relief and euphoria by cutting themselves or by punching the wall or whatever self-injurious behavior they're engaged in, and that's really what's behind it. But that what differentiates them from people who don't engage in that behavior, that they feel like they deserve it. They deserve punishment, or they're defective. There's something wrong with them.
Uh-huh.
So that's why they respond in that manner, where they hurt themselves to kind of cope rather than, say, turning to food or something.
Yeah. Boy, it's just devastating. And that's that sense of self that it seems like we just keep going back to when it comes to this emotional pain.
Mm-hmm.
It's something is wrong with me, and maybe I deserve this. It's just... I've never had these kind of feelings, and my heart breaks to think about someone walking around feeling this way, you know?
Yeah.
Rejection sensitive dysphoria is something that I had never heard of, because it seems like it's really sort of on the leading edge of what's being studied now. In fact, that phrase rejection sensitive dysphoria isn't even part of the medical community. Like they haven't even, I guess, what would you call that?
Well, the medical community, a lot of it accepts that it exists, but it's not in the DSM, so it's technically not an actual diagnosis
yet. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
All right, and this is, could obviously go along with some other neurodivergences, other mood disorders. Like we said, a lot of these are sort of crisscross each other, but they might experience mental pain or discomfort and feel, you know, this rejection that we keep talking about. And the thing that really stood out to me, or interpret like something ambiguous as rejection.
Right. So when they're rejected, when you feel rejected and you have RSD, you have a full body sense of being overwhelmed by the emotions that you feel. Nobody likes to be rejected.
Right.
Now, take that feeling of being rejected and amplify it a million times so that it completely saturates every fiber in your being and then make it so that just about anything anyone says to you is a form of rejection, correcting you for something that you misspoke about, telling you that you're doing something wrong, anything, like breaking plans with you because you have to take your ailing mother to the hospital. Like, all of that is considered rejection, and all of it is met or responded to by this overwhelming flood of negative emotion.
Suicide, we've talked about kind of here and there throughout the episode. Obviously, that's a big risk if you're suffering from depression and BPD. But emotional pain, and again, this is something that we want to draw a distinction. Emotional pain is a real major factor. And it's not everyone, but many, many people who have died by suicide or attempted suicide had reported previously that it was a psychological pain that they were trying to escape from or end.
Right. You know, one thing that I hadn't thought about but makes total sense is there's suicidal ideation, and that can be a coping mechanism for people who are at risk of suicide, and that they're basically saying, like, I can keep making it. It's not quite bad enough yet, and I always have that out of taking my own life if things get too bad. And that's suicidal ideation. And some people just use that to get by and get through emotional pain, to just remind themselves that, you know, it's not that bad yet.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I had not heard of that. I get the basis of it. It's very, very saddening, but I get the strange logic behind it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. All right. So we would love to end on a bit more of a positive note, which is, there are treatments for these things. Like we mentioned, it is an evolutionary signal when you're feeling emotional pain to do something about it. It is your body saying, hey, this is not just this is no way to live, but like this is dangerous for you. Mm-hmm. And you need to take care of yourself and self-soothe and do all those things, but also seek treatments. And there are quite a few treatments that are out there for you, right?
Yeah, there's cognitive behavioral therapy, which basically says we don't know why you're feeling the way you're feeling. Who knows? We might never uncover it. The point of what we're trying to do is to teach you how to live a better life with being saddled with these negative emotions. Learn to deal with them better. Learn to think of them as less powerful than they are. And CBT's been around for a while, and it is probably the most successful psychological therapy there is. And it's kind of given birth to some subsets of it. And a couple of them are really specifically geared toward treating emotional pain. One's called dialectical behavioral therapy. It's been around since the 70s. A psychologist named Marsha Linehan came up with it.
Yeah, this one's interesting. And they say that this is one of the best treatments if you suffer from borderline personality disorder to undergo. And everyone experiences emotional pain, but if you experience these things really, really, really intensely, then this DBT might be for you. It's called dialectical because it's about sort of accepting your behaviors, accepting your situation that you're in, but trying to change them. So the acceptance part is a big piece to DBT, as well as ACT, acceptance and commitment therapy, right?
Yeah, dialectical means like things that are concepts that are in logical opposition to one another. And this one makes a lot of sense. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
They also, one of the big things about DBT is there's group therapy and you practice your skills in it. So you're like, watch this emotional regulation, everybody.
Right.
You know, I'm not quite sure what the groups are like, but I saw that it was more akin to a classroom setting than a group therapy setting.
Yeah.
There's also acceptance and commitment therapy. It has a lot of the same ideas behind it. Basically, that you need to accept that you feel emotional pain and kind of move on without or move on with it. Make the best of your life using mindfulness techniques typically. And both of those things, they center on the idea of you have emotional pain. There's not a lot, you're never going to free yourself from emotional pain. So let's teach you, the person, how to deal with emotional pain better. And that makes a lot of sense, and it actually is effective for a lot of people. But there's also another school of thought that says, like, those things are wrong because they're coming from a premise that you have emotional pain, you just have to accept it and deal with it. There's a guy named Mark Rigo. He's a psychiatrist at Yale, and he's on the other side and says, we need to figure out how to treat emotional pain. You're not going to get any great signals or any great understanding from your emotional pain. We need to get rid of it however we can. And that's kind of controversial because people are like, well, you're pathologizing maybe emotional pain that everybody has. And he's saying, not necessarily. Some people have way more acute or way more chronic emotional pain that's actually debilitating. And rather than them, you know, going to group and practicing their skills, let's figure out some medications to help them get back on their feet. And then they can go to like CBT or DBT or ACT and work it out. But they're so far beyond that. We need to bring them back to the place where that therapy can actually help.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if that helps you, that's great. I think I identify a little more with the previous ones we were talking about, the acceptance, because it kind of ties into the whole I am not my behaviors line of thought.
Yeah.
Like I can be this and also be something else.
Totally.
Which is, I think, can be very empowering.
I mean, I've learned a tremendous amount from my therapy, and it's essentially geared toward that of, like you said, I'm not my behaviors, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my feelings. Like, I am the kind of the sum total of all of those things.
Right.
And also just, you know, learning not to be such a negative Nelly.
Same here, my friend.
You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
All right. Well, if you want to know more about emotional pain, sit back and wait, because it'll come sooner or later.
That's right.
And since I said that, it's time for listener mail.
Oh, no, no. It's time for listener phone call.
What?
first ever. Our old pal, John Hodgman, friend of the show and friend of ours in real life.
Yeah.
Called me. He still listens to our show some.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which made me
feel
really
good.
Yeah,
that's great.
I doubt if he listens to them all. He probably surfs through and skips around and listens to what might appeal to him. But he listened to the episode on the word and phrase origins, which, you know, John, of course, is a talented orator and wordsmith. So it's not surprising that one jumped out at him. But he called because he wanted to talk about the PU. Remember when something stinks?
Yeah.
And he said, I think that might have come about, and it made sense to me, when, because that's sort of the sound you make when you spit something out that might be bad for you. So, like, evolutionarily, if you put something in your mouth that's, like, super bitter, which evolutionarily speaking means it could be poisonous, you go, pew, you know, like, pew, like, spit something out.
Right.
And he thinks PU may have evolved from that.
I saw other places that it's kind of a nuanced version of that, where, like, when you get smacked in the face by a disgusting smell, like the exclamation you make involuntarily is like, pew.
Yeah.
Kind of, that kind of thing.
It makes sense. And just something I think you'll enjoy. I've been holding out on this to tell you. He said, and by the way, he said, did I ever tell you, Chuck, that for the first couple of years I listened to this show before I knew you guys, I thought you had a ponytail. Oh, that just tickled me.
I would pay good money to see you with a ponytail.
Yeah, I thought that was good stuff.
This Halloween's coming up, Chuck.
Just you never know.
10 more months.
So thanks to Haji. Good guy, good friend.
Yeah, great guy. Thanks a lot, Haji, for the first ever listener phone call. And if you want to be like Hodgman, see if you can find Chuck's phone number and give him a call. In the meantime, you can also send us an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine. or a ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today. Health Aid Kombucha.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.